key of the worshipers. Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. I'm on the road, not in studio. So I'm over telephone, so I apologize for the technical quality, but hopefully you'll be able to hear what I have to say. We're going to start off with the latest on health and healing. I'm going to talk about a natural compound that could really improve your opportunity to get over or prevent flu. Also, tryptophan. That's an important nutrient that is recommended for people to get a good night's sleep, is also improving our gut. And then we have a good study that's out of San Francisco Veterans Affairs Medical Center about yoga reducing symptoms of depression. And also from University of Buffalo, how high-intensity interval training can reverse frailty as you age. And published in the Journal of Gerontology, and a lot more on health and healing. Then also today we're going to have in the second part of our program a guest, Bruce Dixon. Bruce is the co-founder and managing editor of the Black Agenda Report, which is the leading internet progressive left nonpartisan voice to the African-American community. And he's going to talk about Google suppression of progressive news and its role in the deep state. And by the way, for the first time, you're seeing some of the mainstream media actually refer to the deep state. But for decades, if you mentioned the deep state, you would get this puzzling stare like, what are you talking about? Is that some kind of conspiracy theory? No, it's real. And I'll be evolving several important stories with significant journalists, highly respected Pulitzer Prize-winning journalists on upcoming programs, as well as a special with Danny Sheehan for an hour, where we're going to show you how, in an effort to destroy Trump, and why would they destroy Trump? Since he surrounded himself with billionaires and oligarchs and people who are out of touch with what America needs or could even relate to the average American. And I believe that the deep state and the power behind the deep state is your national security industrial complex. That includes the CIA, the National Security Agency. They're afraid of him because he can't be predictable to them. Obama, easy. Clinton, easy. Bush, easy. Bush Sr., easy. He's the odd bird out. And as a result, they have tried to get him out of office, which means they've shown their hand. For the very first time, they've actually shown their hand. So what could be the downside of them showing their hand? We'll get into that on upcoming programs. Also today, many of you might have heard, if not, you can download in the archives, how I went to see An Inconvenient Truth, the sequel, and I do recommend people see it. There's a lot of very good information in there and accurate. My challenge, however, and it's not good, bad, black, and white, it's far more parsed nuance, is that Al Gore definitely is interested in helping with the environment. But it's through the eyes and the belief system of a green neocon, meaning someone who believes in the environment, providing that you approach it to make money, to empower big corporations, to get all the government funding going to companies you're personally involved with. At no place in this film did he talk about controlling a $7 billion hedge fund and having associations with people in the film. One solar company in the film he has a financial investment in. And he also said in the film how he met with Barack Obama and got Obama interested in this whole idea. Well, yeah. And Obama then gets behind a package to fund the company he's affiliated with. I'm not suggesting that's illegal. I am suggesting if you're going to do anything where you personally gain from that, be honest about it. Put it in your film. Put all those times you go to in a private jet and someone else is carrying your luggage. Put in there how much that you use 22 times more electricity in your house than the average American, and yet you're lecturing them about energy conservation. And put in there about how you care enough about your own health that you're morbidly obese and sick. And wouldn't that be a good example of you and Leonardo DiCaprio and some of the other hypocrites out there to actually be vegans, promote veganism, and put money into organic farms in areas that take away the carbon footprint? But that's part of it. Anyhow, I gave my 2 cents, but today I'm going to read a commentary from Joshua Frank, The Inconvenient Truth About Al Gore. What people don't realize is that people like Joshua and many others in the progressive movement, we have long memories. And we're going to go back to what happened when he was vice president. It was second to the president as far as knowing everything that was going on. Why didn't he open his mouth when all the bad things about the environment were going on? In fact, he went out and sold them to us. At no point has he ever come forward and apologized for that. So we'll remind him and others about that. Also today, we're going to share something with you, actual quotes from something all the media is avoiding, and that is that there were no Russian hacks of the DNC. Now, that doesn't mean that Russia's a good country without corruption, megalomaniacs, and intrigue. That's absolutely true. However, in order to maintain power, the stay-behinds from the Obama administration, including many former Clinton stay-behinds, are doing everything to maintain their power base. So they put on this whole nonsense about Russia controlled our elections. Well, who's going to put the kibosh to that? Well, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Seymour Hersh, because he's going to show who actually did it and then what happened to him, Seth Rich. I'll quote that today. Also, a commentary today on University of Berkeley, Haas School of Business, and Harvard Business School says believing the future will be favorable prevents anyone from doing anything about it. Wow. This will be interesting. If I have time, I don't know if I will, The Dance of Death, a new commentary by Chris Hedges from Truthdig. And something I found very interesting. As many of you now know, or could easily verify, I posted the entire background of almost 3,000 pages with scientific references, over 4,000 scientific references, and over 3,000 scientists, Nobel Prize winners, the top brains in the world, who are now on alignment that we have to redo the war on AIDS. AIDS is real. People die. But there's a way of treating AIDS, stopping AIDS, that mainstream medicine science want nothing to do with. So they're on the attack to demean anyone, deny anyone any virtue of being right. So now today, the World Health Organization just today says, quote, the World Health Organization raises alarm over resistance to HIV drugs. So that means that the treatments are not working the way they should because there's so many drugs given, and a lot of those are antibiotics, that it destroys the person's immune system. So all the more reason to pay attention to those of us who are helping people live long lives, actually reversing AIDS. But I'm not going to talk about my own work today or anyone else's. I'm going to talk about the man who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus, Dr. Luc Montagnier. Professor Montagnier from the Pasteur Institute is the entire edifice of the entire war on AIDS rests on his shoulders. He founded all this. Robert Gallo, in my opinion, is just a opportunist who exploited that, and you can look at the entire file of the investigation by our own government when he was challenged for taking Luc Montagnier's virus and promoting it as his own. That didn't work out well. We had to pay a lot of money, millions of dollars, to the Pasteur Institute, and it was hushed up. So what does he say should be the best approach? Well, listen carefully, because that's where we're going to start our program today. So I'm going to ask our engineer in New York to get up the clip on Luc Montagnier. Now, mind you, you can have doctors and scientists who say, well, we need more drugs, or we need more, you know, more powerful drugs, or we need different combination of drugs. Fine. I never tell people what to take or not to take. But then there are those of us who believe it's the drugs that are destroying their immune systems. It's the drugs that are causing side effects that can actually mimic full-blown AIDS. I wanted to give you just a little tease of a very important film, and then we're going to come back later in the program to the exclusive clip of just Luc Montagnier being asked how he would go about dealing with HIV infection, and you'll hear that. This is from House of Numbers, and it's extremely important. In any case, we're going to come back to that. It's just that a whole lot about what we've been told about AIDS is simply wrong. Now, let's go to health and nutrition. According to Washington University School of Medicine, the microbes that live in your gut don't just digest food. They also have far-reaching effects on the immune system. Now, a new study shows that a particular gut microbe can prevent severe flu infections in laboratory studies, and likely by breaking down naturally occurring compounds. Now, I've spoken so many times about these compounds, flavonoids, flavo, F-L-A-V-O, N-O-I-D-S. And you're going to find those in onions, apples, green tea, red wine, and very high in blueberries and pomegranate. And that's why I continue to emphasize the health of the body really starts with the health of the bacteria in your gut. And every single thing you eat or drink will either manifest good bacterial outcome or unhealthy bacterial outcome. Sugars, high fructose corn syrup in particular, alcohol in any amount, also processed foods and heavily fried foods like French fries, the crust, anything that's browned, a bagel, a bun, toast, pizza crust, potato chip, pretzels, those have a chemical in them called acrylamides, and it comes from the browning process. And so that acrylamide in the gut plays havoc with your good bacteria. Meat, especially meat that people love, like the bolognese, the salamis, the highly processed meat, that really plays havoc because it also has its own clip, chemical, and that is heterocyclic amines. And that's also a known carcinogen. So anything that has the potential to be a carcinogen or dysregulating to the immune system is going to kill good bacteria. So as the good bacteria are killed, the bad bacteria are then made available. And that is the bad bacteria proliferate. Now, when bad bacteria proliferate, then you end up with fatigue, pain in your muscles, pain in your joints, urinary tract infections, bowel infections, inflammation in the bowel, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, diverticulitis, all these different itises. And you also have problems with an overgrowth of the bad bacteria leading to colorectal polyps and colorectal inflammation and colorectal cancer. So we're not talking about something that's really insignificant. It's highly significant. So just remember, you may love a food, but it doesn't mean it loves you nutritionally. So when you eat the flavonoid-rich foods, you're liberating a particular chemical in the bacteria that favors the flavonoids. So the more flavonoids you eat, the more berries you eat, the more apples, variety of apples you eat, the more green vegetables you eat, the more liberated these positive microbes are, and that even prevents you from getting the flu. That's what this showed. So that's very good, and we need that. Then another study from Washington's University School of Medicine found that our immune cells patrol the gut to ensure that harmful microbes hidden in the food we eat don't sneak into the body. And cells that are capable of triggering inflammation are balanced by cells that promote tolerance and protect the body without damaging sensitive tissues. And when the balance tilts too far towards inflammation, inflammatory bowel disease can result. Now, researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis have found that a kind of tolerance-promoting immune cell appears to carry a specific bacterium in their guts. And further, the bacterium needs tryptophan, one of the building blocks of proteins, to trigger the cell's appearance. So, here's the takeaway message. And that is that when you take lactobacillus and its different forms, you help create normal gut microbiome and the development of a population of healthy cells that promote tolerance. So the more tryptophan that we have from our diet, and a vegan diet, a plant-based diet, gives you more tryptophan, the more of these immune cells we have. Hence, we have a healthier immune system, healthier gut, just by having some tryptophan in the diet. Yoga is as effective at reducing symptoms of depression as many other treatments. This is according to the San Francisco Veterans Affairs Medical Center. So here's the message. People who suffer from depression may want to look to yoga as a complement to traditional therapies, as the practice appears to lessen the symptoms of the disorder. And that was according to the annual convention that just occurred of the American Psychological Association, quote, from the study. Yoga has become increasingly popular in the West, and many new yoga practitioners cite stress reduction and other mental health concerns as their primary reason for practicing it. And then they found that when you do yoga, you're less susceptible to depression. So that's good. And then we have high-intensity interval training can reverse a lot of the frailty as we age. And this is from the University of Buffalo, published in the Journal of Gerontology. So what it means is as you grow older, older is over the age of 40, you may not want to get frail, but unless you're really exercising and doing intense intervals, you will. So this preclinical study has revealed that brief periods of intense physical activity can be safely administered as you age, and that activity helps reverse that frailty. All the time when I'm working with older people, over the age of 40 is older. We actually are aging by the age of 27. We're actually going into old age at 27. I try to get people back into the gym or some health center, and depending upon their weight and their condition, you can always design a program if they got too much weight-bearing pain and any kind of ripped or torn tissue, then it's deep water exercising because there's no pressure upon the joints, ligaments, tendons, and muscles. But if they're okay otherwise, just doing light weights. Let's say you would normally do 10 curls with a 3-pound weight in your hand, each hand. And you don't raise them at the same time. You lift one right arm down, then left arm comes up and then down, so you're alternating. But after you do 10 slow, now pump them out real fast, 10 fast, real fast. That's interval. Let's say you do 5 push-ups, nice and easy and slow. Now do 5 real fast. Let's say you're power walking and you have a comfortable heartbeat. Now go fast for 1 block, as fast as you can go. That's what we're talking about. You've got to break up. I noticed this early in my career. I remember the BBC was over here, and they asked me would I do a little piece on exercise and nutrition and whatnot. And I said, fine. So we went in Central Park, and I pointed to a couple people going around the track. I said, no, what do you see? And they weren't filming yet. This is pre-filming. And someone says, two people exercising. I said, yes and no. They're exercising, but that's called junk exercising. I see these people all the time because I come to this park every day, and you'll see people taking it nice and easy. Well, nice and easy doesn't get you in shape. Nice and easy doesn't lower your resting pulse rate. We could add another 10 years onto the life of your heart. You've got to have intense workouts in there to really create a new message to the muscles. You can do this. In fact, one of the things we do with the Natural Living and Running and Walking Club, which is one of the 5 oldest running and walking clubs in New York State. It's over 40 years old. And we're out there every Sunday in the park, a whole bunch of us, and we have fun. Those who are in better shape, we go out, we do our run, and then come back after 8 miles or so. Then we do a nice power walk with everyone else at a good pace, and we do intervals, faster up the hill, slower down the hill. In any case, what we have found is that to prepare for a marathon or a long-distance event or ultra-distance event, you have to get a pace up and keep it up, even if you feel, oh, my goodness, this is a tough mile, because your cells remember that tough mile. And so the cell is there to help you when you're ready to have it kick in and say, I can do this. And you hear people say, you can do it, you can do it. That's right, you can, if you've trained to do it that way. So for all of you out there who have not been doing your intense exercises, well, first make sure that your heart is in shape to do an exercise. You all should have an annual cardiovascular stress test, and that'll tell you if you have any problems with your heart or circulation. Always keep your pulse so you know what your resting pulse is. The goal is to get your resting pulse down, ideally, in the 50s. If you can go from 75 to 55, you've added upwards of 10 to 15 years on the age of the heart. So that's what it means. I'm Gary Nall, and we're going to finish off our health segment today by going to this clip. So as you see, there are scientists and Nobel Prize winners. And by the way, go up to my YouTube, and you'll see a Nobel Prize winner. He was the first to win a Nobel Prize dealing with AIDS, and he discovered the PCR, polymerase chain reaction, Professor Kerry Mullis. And we went for a walk, and we were filmed on the beach, and I went across the street. He's a very humble guy. He's a very nice guy. No pretension at all. I really just like the fact that he was just being honest and very straightforward. And mind you, he's got one of the best brains in America in science. And he put some doubt in your mind, which means you're going to have to keep doing more research to see whether he's right or wrong. And that's sometimes what's important, because otherwise you're just taking everything you read in the papers and everything you read with the advocates as true, even when they're wrong. So he's one of the honest people. Anyhow, I told him I'd be trying to interview Luc Montagnier, and he said to the effect that Luc Montagnier is an honest man, and he's a great scientist. But Robert Gallo, he did not have kind things to say about. Okay. I had Gallo on my radio program, and after I started asking him some not hard questions, but certainly direct questions, questions the average media person wouldn't average, he hung up. And who was with him when he hung up? Luc Montagnier. So they had a chance to tell their story, but I wasn't going to let them. I don't let anyone just propagandize on the air. If there's a reason to offer a legitimate counterpoint, I will do that. And they couldn't handle that. So then we showed up in Geneva, Switzerland, and there's a period where you're allowed to ask questions. The general public, anybody can get up and go to a microphone. When they saw who we had brought, some of the greatest virologists in the world, professors of virology, they wouldn't take the questions. They refused. Just out and out, we're not answering any of your questions. As if asking a question that might challenge some of the dogma and the lies was just too much to bear. But this is not me interviewing Luc Montagnier now. This is, I think you'll find this interesting. Here's what he has to say about how he believes AIDS and HIV can be dealt with.
You talked about oxidative stress earlier. Is treating oxidative stress one of the best ways to deal with the African AIDS epidemic?
I think this is one way to approach, to decrease the rate of transmission, because I believe HIV, we can be exposed to HIV many times without being chronically infected. Our immune system could get rid of virus within a few weeks if you have a good immune system. And this is the problem also of African people. Their nutrition is not very equilibrated. They are in oxidative stress, even they are not infected with HIV. So their immune system doesn't work well already. So it's prone, it can, you know, allow HIV to get in and persist. So there are many ways which are not the vaccine, the magic name, the vaccine. Many ways to decrease the transmission just by simple measures of nutrition, giving antioxidants, proper antioxidants, hygiene measures, you know, fighting the other infections. So they are not spectacular, but they could, you know, decrease very well the epidemic to the lower, to the level they are in occidental countries,
so
Western countries.
If you have a good immune system, then your body can naturally get rid of HIV.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Do you think we should have more of a push for antioxidants and things of that nature in Africa than antiretrovirals?
We should push for more, you know, a combination of measures, antioxidant by nutrition, advice and nutrition, fighting other infections, malaria, tuberculosis, parasitosis. Most children have worms. Education, of course, genital hygiene for women and men also. Very simple measure, which is not very expensive, but which could do a lot. And this is my, actually, my worry about, you know, the many spectacular action. Of course, there are global funds so to buy drugs and so on, Bill Gates and so on, for the vaccine. But, you know, those kind of measures are not very well funded, not funded at all. Or they are, you know, it really depends on the local government to take conscious of this. But local government, they take advice of the scientific advisors from the international institutions, and they don't get this kind of advice very often.
There's no money in nutrition, right? There's no profit.
There's no profit, yes. Water is important. Water is key.
Now, one thing you said, you were talking about the fact that if you have a built immune system, it is possible to get rid of HIV naturally. If you take a poor African who's been infected and you build up their immune system, is it possible for them to also naturally get rid of it?
I would think so.
Okay. That's an important point.
It's important knowledge which is completely neglected. You know, people always think of drugs and vaccine. So this is a message which may be different from the... what you heard before, no?
The closing?
Yes, my message is different from what you heard from Fauci or...
Yes, yeah. It's a little different.
It's a little different.
Okay, there you have him say it. Let's repeat what he said so we're all clear. Because I can see some of the AIDS and gay activists who are aligned with the pharmaceutical company's heads exploding right now. The mainstream media has been pressured by small active groups who have an ideological, political, or financial interest in keeping this information from you. This is the father of the AIDS war. This is the most important man in the whole world involving AIDS because he discovered the HIV virus. And you just heard him say, you can get rid of the HIV virus with clean water, antioxidants, and clean food. He didn't say it once, he said it twice. And then he also said that that twice you can get rid of it. Then he also said that we put all of our energy into, you know, this is simple. This is very simple. Of course it's simple. All the real solutions to life are simple. We just try to confuse the complexity of a problem with the simplicity of its solution. That's our dunderheadedness. In any case, he also said, we put all of our efforts into the vaccines. By the way, there have been over 70 different major vaccines. Not one has worked. And all these drugs. And now here's what the third part. If I gave 1,000 people right now in this audience, I gave you 500 milligrams of vitamin C a day to take. And at the end of a year, you came down with no colds or flu. Would I be able to go on the air and say, I prevented the flu and colds by 500 milligrams of vitamin C a day? Absolutely not. There are hundreds of mitigating factors that could prevent you from getting the cold and flu. Maybe you were stressed, and then you unstressed. Maybe you went through a detoxification. Maybe you began to get out in the sunshine. Maybe you began to take some vitamin D or vitamins, the quercetin. All these other things could keep you from getting the cold or flu by keeping your immune system happy. Maybe you just didn't have that much stress at work or in your relationship, because we know stress destroys the immune system. But with vaccines, every single time a person takes a vaccine, if they don't come down with the disease, the vaccine's automatically given an 100% credit for preventing that. That's insane science. That is fraudulent science. That is perverse science. That is the worst form of science. So when you have HIV infection and you take a drug, if you don't get full-blown AIDS and die, they say it was the drug. They give 100% of the credit to the drug without looking at your immune system at all. So go up, take your time. Go up and watch the 5 different award-winning documentaries. The last one I did was AIDS Inc., and it shows you all the people profiting off the controlling it. Just like the chemotherapists and radiologists have controlled the war on cancer and criticized and made heretics out of everyone who has an alternative therapy that works. And just like the psychiatrists have controlled the legitimacy of every kid that's been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD and taking Ritalin, it's legitimate. No, it's not. It's all fraud. But they control it. And no media will go up against them. There isn't a courageous person in the mainstream media to go up against any of these people and expose the whole industry. Because there's so much money that their company or magazine or newspaper or radio station or television station would lose if they did that. So we go ahead and just look the other way. Well, we've looked the other way on every single major health issue, from 10 million women every morning taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy that increase their risk of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. So we place the profits and the medical dogma higher on a level of priority than we do saving women's lives. We then allow our children to be taken away and medicated. That is terrible parenting. But it also shows you what happens when you give too much power to the state, and the state now has so much power, it doesn't want to get any of it back. It controls our lives, especially in the medical industrial complex. I know parents who didn't want to give chemotherapy to their child, and they took the child away. In fact, I was personally involved in one case of getting the child back, and we heralded her story on the radio show. We got a letter-writing campaign, and finally, they let the child go back into the care of the parents, and the parent then went down and Dr. Lawrence Burton was helping the child and reversed the child's cancer. I remember because I went down there one day, and here was this little boy. It was hot and humid, which is not uncommon for the Bahamas and the Freeport, Grand Bahamas, and sitting outside on this chair, and I said, the mother was there. I said, you know, I'm going into town. I'll take him for a walk. So I walked into town. And we went by this place, and they were making these what looked like ice cream cones, but they really weren't made out of, you know, ice cream. They weren't made out of dairy. Anyway, I said, boy, doesn't that look good? He said, yeah, I can't have that. I can't have any dairy. I said, well, you can have this. I'm sure your mom won't mind. And, oh, no, I can't have any sugar. He's telling me all the things he can't have. He was just a little cute kid. So I said, which one would you like, vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, and I'll take a vanilla. I said, well, what about a chocolate? He said, I like chocolate. So I said, anyhow, we stacked so many balls of this up on top that he had to kind of hold the top to keep it from spilling, and he was so happy. He had a smile from ear to ear. We walked back, and first his mom got alarmed, thinking he had sugar and dairy. No, that this was just fruit that had been pureed and made in these, and he was happy. And I said, you know, part of the therapy, part of healing is happiness, laughter, finding joy and excitement in life again. And so that just kicked in my memory because of the battle we fought against the state. And I'm just thinking how many parents out there have had their children taken away when the state did not provide better care. These orphanages are terrible. Children are sexually exploited. And it's all because someone's making money and have power. So just remember that. That's important. So now you want to get, you know, you want to help yourself and you have AIDS. There's natural non-toxic approaches. I did a press conference. Look at the press conference. 100 people who had full-blown AIDS, their medical doctors, their records, a panel of scientists were there. I was moderator. I put it all together. I paid for it. and not a single member of the media came. They all were aware of it, a fear of knowing. Fritz Perl, the father of Gestalt, said it best, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So what you don't want to know, you don't do. If you don't want to know the truth, don't look for the truth. Stay attached to the lies, the conditioned propaganda. But there are many people who want the truth. And we don't believe in sugarcoating the truth. Just put it out there, let people make what they want. That said, talking about the truth, this is from Joshua Frank. And after this, we're going to go to Bruce Dixon, who is standing by. This is in an article entitled The Inconvenient Truth About Al Gore. Al Gore is again making headlines with the release of his latest documentary, an inconvenient sequel, Truth to Power. And while Gore may be delivering an important message about climate change and the fate of our fragile ecosystems, one must be wary of the messenger's past. For Gore's own environmental record leaves much to be desired. And I'm not talking about his soaring electric bills. Gore's reputation as the liberal standard bearer for environmentalism dates back to the 1990s when his book Earth in Balance outlined the perilous threats to the natural world. Not long after the book's release, he infamously showboated his green credentials at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, which garnered respect for Gore among Beltway Greens, who praised the young senator for his willingness to take sides on controversial issues. But his tough talk was full of bluff and bluster. Gore's rebel streak had limits. And while serving as vice president under Bill Clinton, Gore was put in charge of the administration's environmental portfolio, but he had nothing to show for it. Other than his alleged environmental convictions, Gore was politically timid when push came to shove in Washington. During Clinton's barnstorming campaign for president in 1992, Gore promised a group of supporters that Clinton's EPA bill would never approve any hazardous waste incinerator located near an elementary school in Liverpool, Ohio, which was operated by WTI. But only 3 months into Clinton's tenure, the EPA issued an operating permit for the toxic burner. Gore raised no qualms. Unsurprisingly, most of the money behind WTI came from the bulging wallet of Jackson Stevens, who also happened to be one of the Gore Clinton's top campaign contributors. Perhaps Gore's greatest strategic blunder during his years as vice president was his allegiance to the Conservative Democratic Leadership Council and their erroneous approach to environmental policy. Gore, like Clinton, had quipped that, quote, the invisible hand has a green thumb, extolled a free market, laissez-faire, neoliberal, globalist attitude towards environmental issues. Quote, since the mid-1980s, Gore has argued with increasing stridency that the bracing forces of market capitalism are potent curatives for the ecological entropy now bearing down on the global environment. That was written by Jeffrey St. Clair in Ben Brown's So Long, It Looked Like Green to Me, The Politics of Nature. He is a passionate disciple of the gospel of efficiency. And then came the first of the Clinton administration's neoliberal wet dreams, NAFTA. After the passage of NAFTA, pollution along the U.S.-Mexican border dramatically increased. Gore knew better. NAFTA allowed existing environmental laws in the United States to be undermined. Corporations looking to turn a quick profit by skating enviro statutes at home moved to Mexico, where environmental standards and regulatory enforcement were scarce to non-existent. These follies were followed by Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt's destructive deal with the sugar barons of South Florida, which doomed vast acreages of the Everglades. Gore and his office were silent. Then Gore and Clinton capitulated to the demands of Western Democrats and yanked from its initial budget proposals to call to reform grazing, mining, and timber practices on federal lands. So when Clinton convened a timber summit in Portland, Oregon, April 1994, the conference was, as one might expect, dominated completely by logging interest. Predictably, the summit gave way to a plan to restore clear cutting in the ancient forest of the Pacific Northwest for the first time in years, giving the timber industry exactly what it desired. Al Gore said nothing. Forest, one of our last defenses against climate change, didn't fare well under Clinton Gore. The Clinton administration's salvage rider, known to radical environmentalists as the logging without laws rider, was perhaps the most gruesome legislation ever enacted under the pretext of preserving ecosystems' health. Like Bush's Healthy Forest Plan, Clinton's Act, which Gore supported, was chock full of deception and special interest pandering. When the salvage bill was given to me, I was told that the timber industry was circulating this language among the Northwest Congressional delegation and others to try to get it attached to a rider to the fiscal year interior spending bill, environmentalist lawyer Kevin Kirshner says. There's no question that the representatives of the timber industry had a role in promoting this rider. There's no secret. In fact, Mark Ray, a former lobbyist for the timber industry and former head of the United States Forest Service under Bush, authored Bush's forest plan and Clinton's salvage bill while working as an aide of Republican Senator Larry Craig of Idaho. Quote, like Bush's so-called Healthy Forest Initiative, the salvage rider temporarily exempted salvaged timber sales on federal forest lands from environmental and wildlife laws. No administrative appeals, no judicial review. And it goes on. So just remember, the next time you see Al Gore, why don't you remind him of what he did with NAFTA, GATT, the World Trade Organization, and the clear-cutting of our great ancient forest. And yet none of that is mentioned in his documentary. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. From Marietta, Georgia, we have Bruce Dixon. He is the co-founder and managing editor of the Black Agenda Report, the Internet's leading progressive left nonpartisan voice to the African-American community. And in the past, Bruce was a rank-and-file member of the Black Panthers in the late 1960s and later became a leading union and labor activist and community organizer dedicated to improving many of our nation's poorest communities and neighborhoods. He also serves on the State Committee on the Georgia Green Party and the Black Agenda Report radio broadcast hosted by Glenn Florida and Naily Bailey can be heard every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. And the report's website is blackagendareport.org. Nice to have you with us, Bruce.
Hey, thanks for having me, Gary. It's blackagendareport.com, by the way.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And we're launching a new and revamped website Sunday night.
Oh, great. Congratulations. Recently, Google has started to suppress alternative or independent news sites. And this includes the Black Agenda Report, but to a lesser degree than sites like Consortium News, where many former U.S. intelligence officers blog. They're censoring Global Research, Counterpunch, Common Dreams, Truth Out, where Henry Giroux and Dar Jamal publish, Intercept, where Glenn Greenwald and Jeremy Scahill are, and others. And Google has something in common with the likes of those that act like cults, although one is considered a cult more of a religious rather than corporate. And these are not my words. There was a book written some years ago called Corporate Cults, The Insidious Lure of the All-Consuming Organization, which at the time looked more like Microsoft when it was at its height of this game. Now it is Google. And Google employees, like members of a religious cult, are cut off from the real world and obsessed with achieving the mission and lofty ideals of its leaders. And you may know that some employees almost live at their facilities, which have been built like living communes with luxury office conditions. And it's like working for Google replaces one's own real family, and it's a dysfunctional family at that. And, of course, their chief scientific officer, Ray Kurzweil, has a cultic status among Silicon Valley techies with his quasi-mystical theory of singularity. So when humans' brains will no longer rely upon biology, but network in a collective computer. And the problem is that Google has become hegemonic on the Internet, almost synonymous with the internet in many people's minds, and it certainly has the hubris in thinking it is the webmaster. It is the supreme spy master, which is why it is so attractive to the U.S. intelligence agencies and the deep state. And every video you watch, every ad you've clicked, every search you've made and text you've sent from an Android, which is non-Apple, a phone, and Google has recorded somewhere in the bowels of its underground multi-byte databases. And this raises the real ethical issue of Google's censorship of news sites and interfering with the principles of democracy and its role as either a tool of the deep state or perhaps even in intimate collusion with it. That's just my personal take on it. Tell us about how you see this, please.
Well, if you go back to 2015, Fortune Magazine, which is tuned into, the business sector, the ruling class, did say that there was something called the First Draft Coalition, which incorporated a bunch of the major tech players, including Facebook, Google, Amazon, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the rest of it, saying that they were going to collaborate on means of making sure that true and accurate information was disseminated over the Internet. Now, of course, these are the same people who, in the name of true and accurate information, told us that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction, who tell us today that the Venezuelan people really want regime change, and that there's nothing bad happening in Brazil, don't worry about it. Back in the early spring of, back in November of 2016, there was a shadowy outfit that surfaced and said that it produced a list of 199 websites which it said were tools of Russian propaganda. Out of those 199 websites, most of them were right-wing websites, real nutcases, like Stormfront.org, which is a Nazi portal, and the Ron Paul Institute, which is a libertarian gateway to stuff. In amongst the right-wing nutcases and some foreign stuff, there were about two dozen, maybe a few fewer than that, authentic left-wing sites. Everybody from Black Agenda Report to Democracy Now! And The Intercept and the others, which you just named, Gary. And almost immediately, almost immediately, the Washington Post picked up the story and made a reference to the organization and the list without publishing it, but other third parties chimed in right away to name what the list was. So effectively, the Washington Post, which is owned by the same guy who owns Amazon, Jeff Bezos, effectively the Washington Post may as well have published the list itself. It gave the list mainstream credibility and gave the accusation mainstream credibility. And the next move we have after that was that in April, Google announced that it was implementing, some changes to its algorithms, implementing changes to what you got when you searched for things on Google. And apparently what they've done, and there was an article. Actually, by now there have been a series of articles in the World Socialist website. And, of course, Google didn't name who it was censoring. But the people at the World Socialist website, who've really done a bang-up job over the last couple of years in using Google to promote their message, went and hired an Internet consulting firm to document what the fall off on their traffic was, and whereas up till now people can speculate that Google is hurting us, they were able to conclusively document empirical evidence that the amount of traffic which came to their site as a result of keyword searches on Google declined by 60%, literally fell off a cliff. And they published a table, which we republished at Black Agenda Report, that ranked a number of sites, I think a dozen sites or 13 sites, from the World Socialist website, whose traffic fell off 60%, to The Intercept, whose traffic fell off, I think, 15% or 20%, including all the ones that you mentioned and a few more. So it's not suspicion anymore. It's not conjecture anymore. It's not hype anymore. There is empirical evidence, and it's a documented fact that the Google algorithms have been adjusted. And what this really shows us is that social media has really never been social media. Social media is, it's not social media any more than the New York Times is all the news that fits the print. That's fit to print. Social media is actually a marketing device, a set of marketing contraptions that the billionaires use to privatize our normal communication, our communication traffic between us, and what they do is they capture that information and they use it for their benefit, not ours, and that's what makes them billionaires. We produce all the content that's on Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't produce any of it. The content that's on Google, Google doesn't produce any of it. We do. And what they do is they aggregate it and take this data and sell it back to us and sell it to marketers. And this also gives them power over what we see. And there are ways out of it for outfits like Black Agenda Report. The best way out of it is for us to convince more and more of our readers to subscribe to our direct email lists. Because when you come to a site like Democracy Now! Or Black Agenda Report or Truth Out, when you come there from an email notification, you didn't come there through Google. And Google has no means of tracking your preference or tracking how you got there. It can tell you're there, but it can't tell how you got there. So there are ways that we can begin to get around it, but we have to train ourselves to use means of searching for things on the web that don't leave us open to this kind of manipulation.
I appreciate that insight. And also, I read the statistics. It wasn't just that one that lost 60% of the search capacity. It was every single one of the alternative and important and truly honorable and honest and diligent websites like Global Research and Truthdig and Truthout and Consortium and Countercurrents and Black Agenda Report. So clearly, well, it's my personal opinion that behind all this is the deep state not wanting people to know the alternative opinions and truths and realities exist. So if they can prevent people from getting there, if they can in some way block or limit them being aware of how many important articles, collectively we publish over 1,000 articles a week on all these different sites. We carry about upwards of 100 a day, even on Progressive Radio Network. And I don't know if you saw it, but Progressive Radio Network had 29 million visits just in the last in 1 month. So
we are powerless. We tend to think that we are powerless and our conversations are insignificant, but the powers that be spend an enormous amount of effort just to make sure that our conversations are limited in range and reach. So this ought to tell you that our conversations are powerful, and it is unfortunately, in a just world, the public would own the public conversation, but this is not a just world. This is late stage neoliberal capitalism. So the public does
not
own.
Well, what can happen now, Bruce? People can listen to the Black Agenda Report every Monday at 11 a.m., I should say, preceding my show, and go directly to your site, Black Agenda Report, is it .com?
Yes, it is.
Okay, blackagendareport.com, and they're putting a new site up this weekend, and there's a whole lot of people going to these alternative sites, and they don't want people going there. We do. We are more educated on the issues than they are, and so I appreciate all the good work that everyone over at the Black Agenda Report does, and keep it up, and we look forward to your show on Monday.
Well, thank you, sir.
Bruce Dixon from Marietta, Georgia. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. And, by the way, don't forget, I'm doing a premiere of Plant Codes for our sister station, WBAI, coming up on the 15th, and you can reach out to WBAI for that information. Have a nice day, everyone.